great to see everyone here today at our 316 campus. Those of you who are joining us at our 211 campus or online, I am fired up today because today we begin a brand new series that I've been praying about and thinking about for some time called Replenish. And let me give you a little backstory on this series. Really, this series is born out of not only my own experience, but really the conversations that I've had with others that really the speed of life is taking a toll not only on us mentally or physically or spiritually, it's taking a toll on our souls. And let me let you in on a secret that's really not much of a secret at all. In fact, the great theologian Ferris Bueller said it this way: life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop to look around every once in a while, you might miss something. And really, if you think about it, our culture is moving at an unprecedented speed. And we feel it all around us. And really, it's moving so fast that it's even difficult to measure the speed of growth and the amount of information that is coming our way and just what we're having to deal with in our society, in our culture. But let me give you just kind of an idea. In doing some research on this, this is how rapidly our culture is moving. Prior to the 1900s, information doubled every century. Think about this. By the end of World War II, every 25 years. Presently, most experts would say information is doubling every, listen to this, 12 months. So every year, information is doubling. But hang on. Information, listen, once we are fully connected, once our life is fully connected, and by fully connected, I mean our clothes, our shoes, our internet, our buying habits, the phones that we carry, our cars. Once that's fully connected to the internet, they are saying that information will double every 12 hours. Think about that. Every 12 hours. One tech CEO said it this way: if you could imagine the internet at the size it currently is really the size of a golf ball. When it is fully realized, it'll be the size of the sun. Life and culture are moving at a speed that is unprecedented. And every single person in here and in our culture is feeling it and is taking a toll on our very souls. Now, I want you to imagine this for a second. I ran across this in research. But I want you to imagine, this is the number of years it took for each product to gain 50 million users, okay? The first airline industry, 68 years. Automobile, 62 years. Telephone, 50. We move on. Credit cards, some of our favorite right here, 28 years. ATM, 18 years. And you see where we're going. Computer, 14. Internet, 7. Facebook, how many of you are on Facebook? All right, a lot of us, most of us. Facebook, 3 years. Twitter, 2 years. And my favorite, Pokemon Go, 19 days. It took 19 days to amass 50 million users on Pokemon Go. Now, just for curiosity and confession, how many of you have Pokemon Go on your phone right now? Just go ahead. Not a lot of people are raising their hands for this. But 50 million people downloaded in 19 days. So somebody's playing it. But the truth is, listen, you feel it and I feel it. Now, there may be some of us in here, maybe you're not connected to technology, and maybe you're thinking, you know what, the speed of my life is moving that fast. Listen, just to put us all on a level playing field, let's have a little fun for a second. Give us a little perspective. You may feel as if you're sitting still right now. But think about this. It's an illusion of miraculous proportion. Planet Earth is spinning around its axis at a speed of 1,000 miles per hour. Every 24 hours, planet Earth pulls a celestial 360. We're also hurling through space in an average velocity of 67,108 miles per hour. That's not just faster than a speeding bullet. That's 87 times faster than the speed of sound. It gets better. So even on a day when you feel like you didn't get much done, don't forget, you did travel 1,599,793 miles through space. And to top things off, the Milky Way is spinning like a galactic pinwheel at a dizzying 483,000 miles per hour. Now, for those of you in here who are teenagers and you're in summer vacation and your parents look at you and go, hey, do something, please, with your life, all right? Don't just sit on the couch. Here's what you can tell them. Mom, Dad, I did do something today. I traveled 1,599,793 miles through space, all right? That's a pretty big deal. But the truth is our life is moving at a speed that really is becoming addicting, and we don't know how to turn it off. That our physical lives, that our mental, spiritual lives are always in the on position. And we feel it at a soul level. To really make my point, think about this. Generation Z. Generation Z is the current generation. In fact, it's the largest generation in the history of humanity. And so this current generation, as we begin to get data on it, here's what we're finding out. That Generation Z, we're seeing that alcoholism is down. It's good news. Drug addiction is down. Teenage pregnancy is down. But watch this. Anxiety is up. Stress is up. And suicides are at an unprecedented rate. You see, there's something wrong. We have never been more connected in our lives than ever before. The world has never been smaller. And yet, listen, we feel empty, lonely, and lost. The speed of life is taking a toll on our souls. So I want you to think about this. While we speed through life, we cannot speed through relationships. While we speed through life, there's certain things in our life, listen, that we cannot change. It's just the speed of life. We can't change those things. They're going to happen. But what we can't do is we can't speed through relationships. And our souls long to be connected to something. The question really is, what are we connecting our souls to? And maybe more importantly, what is a soul? You may be familiar with the word soul. You may even believe that you have a soul. But what is a soul? Well, we probably first heard about the soul when we were kids. And we used to pray a prayer at night. And you know it. You remember it. You still have nightmares because of it, right? Now I lay me down to what? I pray the Lord my soul to. If I should die before I pray the Lord my soul. What were our parents thinking? That is literally the worst prayer you could possibly pray, right? The worst prayer you could pray right before you shut all the lights down. Some of us are still having nightmares because of that. So what is a soul? Well, recently, this is interesting. Recently, a lady tried to sell her soul on eBay. She said she needed some quick cash, and so she offered up her soul on eBay for $2,000. Now, she didn't have any takers, and to come find out, she found that eBay has a no-soul-selling policy. So just in case you're wondering, you can't sell your soul on eBay. So what is the soul? Well, one of my favorite authors, Dallas Willard, says this about the soul. He says, what is running your life at any given moment is your soul. The soul is the life center of human beings. So what is running your life at any given moment is the soul. It's the life center of human beings. In fact, we see a picture of this in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26 and 27. When we see the creation account, and this is what it says. It says, then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. So we're like God. And let them have dominion over the fish. We'll come back to this. Dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So there's little bugs, the little things that drive us crazy. Good news is you have dominion over them. You can stomp them and not feel guilty. That's what that means right there. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. In other words, God just didn't create us to be connected, to be in relationship. God created us to be whole beings. And what that means is that all of us were created. We possess physical, emotional, spiritual, and intellectual dimensions to our life. So what does the whole of that image look like? Really, that's what we're going to talk about today. In fact, I put a little diagram in your notes. In that first little circle right here, I want you to write the word will. Will. You see, the will is the ability to choose yes or no. It's what allows us, as Genesis 1:26 says, to exercise dominion. It's what separates us from creation. We can exercise our will. We feel this. We know this. In fact, we would even say sometimes that you might have a strong-willed child. Some of you might have a strong-willed spouse. Just raise your hand if you would like to say. A lot of hands in the room, all right? You're going to be in trouble later. Just want to let you know that. So, you know, in our family, we say that we have a strong-willed child. And our son, our firstborn son, Cooper, he has a strong will. And here's what I love about his will. He's the first to do everything. That he's so competitive by nature that he's just the first. He wants to be the first to do it, and he wants to do it better than anybody else. In fact, when he was 3 years old, he told me that he was ready to ride a bike, a two-wheel bike, no training wheels, anything. And I said, son, you're 3 years old. He said, Dad, I can do it. Sure enough, he did it on his own. It's just who he is. But his will has limits. There's a limit to it. When I watch his will break down, when I see him get to the point where he can't just move forward, he grabs his security blanket, puts his thumb in his mouth. And I know that in that moment, like, his will has limits. The second aspect of it is the mind. And the mind is the sum of our thoughts and emotions. Think about it that way. That you and I are constantly having a conversation with ourselves. That we have this conversation that's going on right now. For some of you, you're having a conversation in your head right now. You're thinking, when's this going to be over so I can go eat? How long is this going to be? You know, or maybe you're thinking about what you got to do next. Or what's going on. But you're having a constant conversation in your mind. And they're good thoughts and bad thoughts. And we're constantly managing the information, the thoughts that come into our mind and leave out of our mind. That happens in the mind. And here's the thing about the mind. The mind's interesting because there is always this competition between the mind and the will. Let me explain it this way, because you know this to be true. Like, we may wake up in the morning and go, I know I need to exercise today. But then our will says, yeah, but I don't really feel like it. Like, your mind knows it's a really good idea to exercise today. Like, you should get up. You should do something. That's important. It matters. But the will goes, how about tomorrow? And so there's this constant thing going on between our mind and our will. In other words, our will can override our mind. What's interesting is the Apostle Paul talked about this in Romans chapter 7. Here's what he said. He said, the things I want to do, I don't do. And the things that I don't do or don't want to do, I do. What he's talking about is how the mind is at war with the will. Well, here's the third aspect of it. And we know this. This is the body. That you and I have a body. And let me explain what the body is, okay? The body is your kingdom. It's what allows you to exercise your will and your mind. Your body takes what goes on in your mind and your will, and it executes the action. Now, it will execute the action as long as it has enough energy to do so. There are times when our body breaks down. There are times when we don't care for our body. We don't take care of our body, and then our body can't execute the action of our mind and our will. We want to do something, but our bodies won't allow us to do it. This is why it's so important, is that we pay attention to the body. The body is part of the image of God. We need to pay attention to it. I say it this way, that the physical and the spiritual are intimately connected. The body, the mind, and the will are intimately connected. You can't ignore either part of them. But here's the final, the last circle. And that's the soul. It's the soul. That's really what we're talking about in the series. So what is the soul? Well, the soul integrates all of these parts, into a single whole life. I like to think of it as a computer program. And the computer program integrates the soul. It's part of who we are. And you might say it this way, that the soul is the operating system of your life. But it integrates. It's kind of like if you have an iPhone, it's kind of like the iOS of your iPhone. It's the operating system. It tells everything what to do in your computer. And we don't notice it much until it messes up. And then other things start breaking down. But here's the big idea I want you to get today, just kind of launching out in this series. Here it is, right here. This is in your notes. We tend to work on pieces of our lives. Maybe the body. Maybe your focus is on the body. Maybe it's the mind. Maybe it's the will. But what God wants to restore is the whole of our lives. The whole of our lives. You see, all the factors matter. And listen, if you don't pay attention, you don't realize that we are made to be whole creatures in the image of God. If you ignore any aspect of what makes us men and women created in the image of God, it results in destructive consequences in both our relationship with God and our relationship with others. It matters that we realize that all these things, all these components are important. And the soul is the operating system for our lives. That's why it's important that we pay attention to the soul. Now, what's interesting is that when you think about self-help books often only focus on one of these aspects. One thing. Maybe it's the mind, your thoughts. Maybe it's the body. But a biblical perspective, a biblical approach is to focus on all of them holistically. So it matters. You and I were created to be connected to God. But here's the thing. While our souls were created to our souls were not created to operate at the speed of life. Our souls were created to operate at the speed of relationships. You see, what we feel in life, the tension, the speed that's affecting our souls, the thing deep within us, is the fact that our souls were not created to operate at the speed of life. In other words, we are anchoring our souls to creation, when in reality, what our souls were created is to be anchored to the Creator. And when we anchor our souls to creation, it does damage to us. In fact, for many of us in here, we are connecting our souls to creation. And what that creates in us is a hurried spirit or a hurried soul. You feel it. In fact, it's the reason why hurry is an enemy to our souls. We feel drained because we are connecting our souls to the pace of life. And our souls weren't created to be connected to life. Our souls were created to be connected to relationships. And you can't speed through relationships. You can't microwave relationships, both horizontal relationships and our vertical relationship with God. That is what we feel, the speed of that. And what we're constantly trying to do, listen, is we're constantly trying to speed up our lives, to become more efficient, to do it faster. And it's taking a toll on our souls. And it's leading to this hurried spirit that we probably see in the mirror in the morning and we see on others. You see, that hurried spirit is when we're at the supermarket and we're going to check out. And there are three lines, and we look at the three lines and we're thinking, which line should I pick? And so you choose the line, and inevitably, what are you doing? You're looking at the other lines, right? And you're thinking in your mind, did I choose the right line? And then if you're like me, you always choose the wrong line. You always choose the wrong. And so you're looking out there. And that feeling that you get when you're like, if I would have been on that line, I could have already been checked out. I could have been out the door right now. That feeling that you get is the hurried spirit. It's that hurried soul that we have. You deal with it and I deal with it. And I think what this series is about is like slowing our souls down and realizing our souls were created to connect the speed of relationships. And you cannot hurry relationships. I saw this in my 6-year-old son yesterday when we were pulling up to a stoplight and there were three lanes. And my son goes, Dad, you're picking the wrong lane. Dad, you're in the wrong lane. You're in the wrong lane. And he was right. I picked the wrong lane. Listen, we all feel this. We all feel this. So what do we do? What do we do for our souls? Well, here's what Dallas Willard says. He says we must relentlessly work to eliminate hurry from our lives. We must relentlessly work to remove hurry from our lives. It takes work to remove hurry from our lives. We've got to put barriers and boundaries in our lives to keep our souls healthy. And we've got to work to eliminate hurry from our lives, because hurry is an enemy to the soul. Now, I want to take this one step further. I want to illustrate something to you. I want you to imagine for a second. I want you to imagine for a second that your soul is a bucket. That your soul is a bucket, and you're constantly filling your soul with something. Now, your soul is a bucket that you're created to be connected to God, but our soul has enemies. The first enemy we see is the external, what I call the external forces that war against our soul. These external forces are things like the pace of life, just the speed of life, you know, traffic on 316, okay? Can I get an amen? Traffic on 85, for those of you who commute. And here's what it does. It drills holes in our soul. There's just something about it. It does damage to our soul. That really, you think about it, our souls were created to be at rest. But the speed that is required in life is doing something to our souls. In other words, the speed and the desire to accomplish things at work, because we think the things at work, the higher promotion, the greater income, will lead to a easy soul. And the reality is it doesn't. And so we work and we work and we work. And the things at home, the relationships, both our family relationships, our friendships, and our relationship with God get put on the back burner. And it does something to our souls. Or, I thought about this. You think about every time you have to dispute an insurance bill or a cable bill. That feeling you get when you get on the phone and you have to make that phone call. What does it do? It puts a hole in your soul, right? You feel it. The anxiety level keeps rising. But here's the second enemy. The second is internal forces. These are things inside of us. These are things that we all deal with. These are things like insecurity. For those of us in here who battle with compulsion, Amazon, thank you. What does it do? It drills a hole in our soul, especially when we have to pay it back. And there are other aspects of it. There's anger. For some of us in here that we're angry. Maybe you're angry at life. Maybe you're angry at the situation. Maybe you're angry at somebody else. And every time you lose your temper, it does something to your soul. You see, these two forces are really enemies to our soul. And these two forces leave us weary and burdened. And watch this. Here's what we do. We try to fill our lives with the things of this world. And every time we try to fill our lives with the things of this world, here's what happens. We feel the life draining out of our soul. And no matter what we do to try to fix it, to try to fill the hole in our souls, we think if we upgrade our lives, if we get the new phone, if we get the new car, if we get the new house, if we get the new spouse, that we think that's going to fill the longing in our souls. And this is what is happening to our lives. And here's the reality, Bethlehem. We cannot fix this. The drain that you feel in your life, in your soul, listen, you cannot fix it, no matter what you do to upgrade your life. I would just ask you the question. If upgrading our life was really what would satisfy us, the things of the world, if that was really what would satisfy us, how did the last upgrade work in your life? Or did you just want the next and the new? Thinking somehow that that would satisfy the longing in our souls. And the truth of it is, it's only leaving us weary and burdened, because the things of this world cannot satisfy the things of your soul. Your soul was created for more. Jesus said it this way in a familiar verse found in Matthew chapter 16. He says, "For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and he forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in return for his soul?" You see, when I read this the first time as a young kid and even growing up, I had this tendency to think that what Jesus was saying is, what does it matter if you acquire wealth or you acquire prestige, popularity, and you have things, you amass these little kingdoms? What does it matter if you build your kingdom and you die and you go to hell? But really, this verse is more than that. This isn't just a verse that's about a destination. This is a verse that is about diagnosis of our souls. That for all of us in this room, what Jesus is saying is, yes, that is true, but hey, it's deeper than that. At a soul level, the way we live our lives, what does it profit a man if you're constantly trying to fill your bucket, trying to fill your souls, and yet the life keeps draining out of you? What does it matter if you keep working to fill it back up? Because it's just going to drain out. Because our souls were created for more than this. Our souls, again, weren't created to be anchored to creation. Creation can't satisfy the longing in your soul. Only your Creator can do that. It's the only thing that can give us an easy soul. And listen, our world has replaced the word soul with the word self. And most of our world is trying to preach work on self. And the problem is, when you work on self only, it does damage to your soul. Because the soul is the operating system of your life. And that is why you feel today weary and burdened. Because you're busy working on self. And what Jesus said is, I've come for more than that. In fact, Jesus says it this way. For those of us who feel weary and burdened, he says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you" what? Rest. I will give you rest. He goes on, he says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." For you find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy. I love that word, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. You see, easy is a soul word. And really, this is what's interesting. The word easy literally translates replenished, refreshed. That's what that word means. What Jesus is saying is, he's saying, follow my example. Learn from me. You can live a life, no matter what the circumstances are going on around you, that feels replenished and rested if you anchor your soul to your Creator. You see, Jesus said, learn from me, and I think he said that for a reason. Because you think about Jesus. Jesus faced enormous stresses and difficulties. He was despised, ridiculed, and constantly bombarded by people wanting his time, attention, and affection. And yet, watch this, he never got cynical. He was never unloving, and he never burned out. And most importantly, watch this, he always maintained his joy. You see, people who are weary in spirit have lost their joy. We see it in our own lives, and we see it in the lives of others. Because the things of this world do damage to our souls. They affect our souls. And Jesus really makes this powerful declaration that if you feel like you are struggling in life, if you feel like you are weary, that you can't move forward, then here's what he says, I will give you rest. at a soul level. You see, Jesus lived his life with a certain rhythm. There was a certain rhythm in which he lived his life. And what's interesting about this rhythm is that it's contrary to the way the world operates. And next week, here's what we're going to do. We're going to look at that rhythm. We're going to look at the rhythm of how Jesus lived his life. And when he says, hey, come to me, learn from me, learn from how I lived my life. There are things that we can learn from Jesus that if we will apply them to our lives, will change our souls, will fix the longing in our souls. The problem is, as we're going to find, most of us run it the opposite way. And listen, I know next week, guys in the room over at 211, I know next week is Father's Day. And I know Father's Day is a great day. All right, they don't celebrate us much, all right? So that one day a year is really, really important to us. But here's the great news. The great news is next week we are going to speak life into men here. And we're going to talk about what it means to live a life that reflects the way Jesus lived his life. And guys, listen, if you feel like you're just on the treadmill of life, you feel like you're running at a pace that is unsustainable, and you feel like you're searching for significance but nothing in this world is satisfying you, that's what we're going to talk about next week. What we're going to talk about is how significance isn't found in what we do. It's found in who we are. And that's what Jesus offers us, the rhythm of grace, that our soul can be at ease, no matter what is going on around us. I want to end with a story. In fact, it's a story that's been told for more than 100 years. Some of you have heard it before. But as the story is told, it says Horatio Stafford invested much of his life into real estate. It was the main focus of his life. He lived in Chicago. And in Chicago, he lost everything that he had in the Great Chicago Fire in 1871. It destroyed his home. He had no insurance and lost everything that he had on this earth. In 1873, he put his wife and their four daughters, their son having already died of scarlet fever in 1870, on a ship headed for England. And as he stayed behind to restart his business, trying to restore what had been lost, a few days later, the ship departed and he received a telegram from his wife. And this is all that it said. It said, saved alone. What shall I do? There had been a shipwreck, and all four of their daughters had perished. A story says that Horatio quickly boarded another ship to England, and as he passed over the very same place in the ocean where his daughters had drowned, he wrote these words to a familiar song, a familiar hymn, that say, when peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul.